figure out what kind of property in the areas, like, so you have a market that you're looking at, and then find the areas within it that you feel that are going to work for your business plan. If you want to be buying properties for a 5 or 7 year business plan, then you can get a touch more aggressive and start pushing that line of gentrification, you know, that push that line a little bit more. If you're looking for shorter holds, you have to buy like when you're inside of it.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Charles Carrillo is managing partner of Harborside Partners, a real estate syndication firm, and has been actively investing in multifamily real estate since 2006. He also hosts the Global Investors Podcast, and as an aside, he's visited 47 of the 50 United States and 40 countries. Charles, that's a lot of countries to go to, man. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Sam. It's awesome to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. I look forward to digging in a little bit more about that, you know, as we get into the episode here. But really, you know, there's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Started just with small triplex multifamilies in 06. So after getting out of college, a couple of years after getting out of college, or no, it was the year I graduated college, actually. So it's the year I got out of college, started buying triplex multifamilies. My dad had been investing in multifamily since 1984. So he kind of like really pushed it and motivated me to buy. And 06 being a very interesting time. And then I bought again in 08, and that was a much different time. And then 09 was completely different. It was three really different years in real estate investing. And then, so, you know, had some small commercial properties there, had some small multifamilies. I moved to Florida in 2012. And right now what we're focusing on is buying larger multifamily complexes. And we syndicate it with passive investors.
Man, that's fantastic. It's a lot of moving pieces there. When you say there was three very distinctive buying a real estate kind of windows, I mean, what are some things you think of when you say that? And, you know, do you see anything that's kind of eerily similar now?
Well, one thing that I saw when I would talk to people is, and there's so many people getting into real estate investing right now. And when I bought in 06 and interest rate, I think was 6.5%. I bought in 08, interest rate was 5.5. And it just, now, you know, who knows, you know, it's all the way down into the twos now or something. So the thing though is that how much it's changed since then, but also when I bought in 08, people I did business with buying, and like my real estate agent in 06, completely not even had his license anymore, completely out. And I realized that throughout the whole process that like it was my attorney, and I had this really rock star mortgage broker, but most mortgage brokers were gone. But, and, you know, it was really just certain licensed people, like, you know, attorneys, kind of like that, like a 3-year college kind of thing, were still in the business. Obviously, they have so much invested in it. But a lot of agents were out. A lot of originators, mortgage originators were out of the business. A lot of appraisers were out of the business. I mean, you could negotiate anything you wanted in 09. I was having like some electrical work done on a property I bought that was completely vacant that I'm selling now, actually, in end of 09. And I would just have like contractors come over and they would just give me like base bottom rates and be like, listen, like I need to work, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll go to Home Depot and get it if you give me the okay and I'll do it today. And completely different from today. So it's like you had so many tradespeople that were hit so hard, and any type of work you had, like I had porches put on there, like, listen, like whatever that guy said, just like take off like 5% or 10%. I don't care. I need to work. I have all these people that need to work. And it was just like completely different from today. But 06 was similar to that too, because you have, it was very difficult like today to get skilled labor to do jobs. You know what I mean? To get people that actually knew what they're doing, that actually showed up to even give you a quote today. I mean, you know what I mean? Let alone actually do the work. So
yeah, that's the environment we're in right now, is just, it's almost impossible, you know, to get anybody qualified to get anything done because they're just so stinking busy. You know, it's a great place to be if you're a contractor.
Right.
I certainly remember those. I was in the trades in that window of 6 to, you know, 2012, actually, when I got out of the trades. But yeah, I remember that. We went from 30 guys down to one. And it just, yeah, it's just like, where did work go? It dried up and disappeared. But, you know, that's really interesting. When you think about, you know, just talking on the kind of the labor shortage that we're experiencing right now, how are you guys overcoming that today on your properties?
We're getting a lot of relying more and more on property managers to get work done, and prices are just going up. Like it's, I just see stuff and like, seriously, like, is this, am I stupid? Cause this price is just like completely high. And then I always compare it to like, this is what I pay my attorney and this is what I'm paying, you know, for this. And it's completely just, there are so many people that are in demand for doing these jobs, but relying on property managers to get a lot of referrals and using a lot more contacts. Years back, we used to do like a lot of our own searching for GCs and stuff like this. And now it's turned into the property managers and they're like, listen, this person knows, you know what I mean? They have a personal relationship. And now you're like being brought in like, hey, a friend of ours could do this for you or like whatever it is. And you're like, okay, I mean, like I need to have it done. And you know, you pay through the roof or through the nose on it now of what's going on. But I mean, that's just what it is. You got to keep the properties maintained and you have to keep, you know, when there's issues, they have to get resolved and you got to keep those tenants happy and tenants in there.
Right. Absolutely. You guys are investing in really the Sun Belt states and you've been doing it for a lot longer than really the Sun Belt states were kind of the hot topic. Yeah. How has that changed? And then how are you guys staying competitive?
It's crazy. I mean, we're selling like pretty much all of our holdings in Tampa right now that we've picked up over the last few years. And it's just what the numbers are. It's insane. But it's also one thing too, is that properties that we're invested into mainly in Tampa, which are like in the C plus area, they can't build anymore, right? So anything that's going in that's new there, it needs to have a 2 in front of the rent, right? Where we are in the low 1, you know what I mean? So $1,100 is what we're renting a place for, and something that gets built new needs to be, you know, 2,000, 2,23, 2,500. So there's a missing margin there of, you know, kind of a window for people that, listen, if you don't want to pay 2,500, this is kind of like the other option that you have. And being in Tampa, it's like you can live in a place with the Tampa address, or you can kind of go out a little bit more and stuff like that. But we'll kind of see how everything goes. But I don't see, I mean, Tampa is one of the hottest rent markets. I was reading something yesterday. It was the highest rent growth. I think it was like 10 basis points behind New York City. So second highest rent growth in the United States year over year. It's like over like 30.3% or something. And that's crazy. I mean, that's completely nuts. And I was living in St. Pete. Now my family and I my wife and I are back over in Palm Beach area, but I was living in St. Pete for 4 years. And, you know, we were renting over there and the rent would just like, you know what I mean? It would just skyrocket 15% on every renewal. And, you know, that's just kind of what's going on in that area. But Florida, like I think a lot of other places in the Sun Belt area, is there's a lacking of clean, like C plus B minus housing. You've got stuff that's like C minus, that's like dangerous walking to your car, people would think. And then you've got like $2 million pool type place that's a B plus, that's $3,000 a month. And there's like, you don't have anything for like 1500, right? No, it's like, it's all, that is a very, very hard window. And because that property's had to be built in the 80s, 70s, 90s, you know what I mean? Whatever, it's anything built in the 2000s. I mean, like I said, it's going to be, it has to be $2,000 and above in rent for, especially if it's traded in the last few years, or they have any kind of halfway decent property manager. So it's very difficult for people to find clean, affordable housing in a lot of states in the Southeast.
Are you filling that gap?
Yeah, because we're really focusing, my specialty really where I focus is like C plus, B minus, and B, kind of right in that area. So you have stuff that you are, so you're finding properties that are, that need a little bit of work, right? That are a little bit aged, you know what I mean? They're not these really, really nice assets, but where you can do some work, the neighborhood's good. You're in an area that's gentrifying even more, right? So there's even more money coming into it. But like we have one property right now, it's a 68 units, part of another portfolio that we have in this area in Tampa. And we'll literally get 80 people a month that will stop into the office. And that's more units. That's more people coming in than we even have units at the property. So it just goes to show you that people are like, and this is just like drive-by. These aren't people like, this is like traffic coming in. This isn't calls. And it's like completely nuts. So you're like, well, we have 100% occupancy at this property. Even every 6 months, just like, hey, whatever we're offering, we just up at $25 or whatever. Because the property manager is like, oh, this, you know, that's kind of how they do it. So you're like, you know, there's still a demand for, because there's this missing window for most people that are, hey, I can't afford $2,500, or that's like more than half of my income.
Right.
And a lot of things down on the nicer properties I found in these places in Tampa. I remember the last apartment we lived in years back in St. Pete 3 years ago. So the thing was like, they didn't even check your income. You know what I mean? And it was like, wow. So you're like, and this was like a $2,000 a month apartment in St. Pete, and Tampa's more expensive. And you're like, wow, like you guys aren't even like verifying income. Like, so you're like, you know what I mean? Kind of a thing. You're just like renting to anyone that has a halfway decent credit score. And that's something I found with some of these larger, newer complexes that were having issues, I think, putting people in at these higher prices. But the stuff where we're taking security deposits on it. You know what I mean? We're going through 3x income, the whole 9 yards of how you're supposed to manage a property.
Sure. So you're saying that on the higher end properties, they were foregoing the, you know, the tenant screening process just in order to keep those properties filled. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. And this was, I think last time I saw that was 2019. So it was, yeah, 3 years ago. So the thing is that when I saw that, it was something that like, wow, like you guys are having like, this must be an issue for having people move in. And there was no security deposit either. They were just like doing it. And I had really good credit, so I have no idea if that changed anything. But the thing though, is that it's just, you know, usually you would take at least a $300 security deposit from someone or something like this, but no security deposit, no verification income. They just like, you know, made sure you could fog a mirror and that your credit was like halfway decent, I guess. So,
and I would imagine times have changed with the demand, you know, for housing, especially where you guys are. I mean, I can't imagine that trend has continued.
I don't think so, but this is company that owned it was a large private equity firm out of Manhattan. And I mean, there was some reason for it. Maybe they did out their numbers and they said, listen, most people don't screw us on the security deposit if they have these other things. So why are we even going to do it? It makes it easier for us underwriting and renting. So, I mean, they know it better than we do, but the thing though is what works for them, but it's also something funny because, you know, you can find a lot of these nicer apartments in a lot of the places down in like Florida and Georgia. It takes a lot more work to find something that's like an 80s vintage or 90s vintage. Even if it's been updated, it's still an 80s or 90s vintage. And that's where we have a lacking of people that you can rent those properties from with, first of all, that they're available. And number two is that they're actually in halfway decent shape. So that's where the value add there, because no matter what they jack their rents up to, people can build new inventory all day long. It just makes the people that are in that C plus, B minus, B area, right, that are dealing with 30-year-old properties or 20-year-old properties, you can't build any more of that, especially not at the prices that, you know, we've seen prices today as you being previously in the trades. I mean, how expensive stuff is to build now.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is you guys can really focus in that 30 to 40-year-old asset class. You can make it a decent place to live and then still hit your numbers way below maybe what some of the newer stuff coming online is and really fill a void in the market.
Yeah. And then the other thing too, is just one last thing is that I had a mentor one time tell me, he goes, listen, when people get hit, they get punched. You know what I mean? So like, it's not like you have a family that has a house, they're making 120 a year and they lose a job and they like, oh, we'll just get rid of some like wine subscriptions we have. Like they like move down in-house like dramatically when there's a loss of income. I was renting to Connecticut to one of our properties, and this was like a small attic 2-1 or something. I remember this is like in 2009, and I had this family from Cape Coral, Florida, which is like over by Fort Myers on the West Coast. And they had owned a $400,000 house and they relocated back up to Connecticut. They were paying like $690 a month to me for this apartment, right? And I'm like, they must have been paying like $3,000 a month for this mortgage down in Florida, especially with 6.5% interest rates and all this kind of stuff. And they probably didn't put much down on it. So you're like, you went from like, you're like getting rid of 80% of what you're paying in living costs or something like the 70%, whatever it is. And you're like, that's a major change in your life. So that's one thing too. It's like people are like, oh, they're an A, they'll go down to B. Well, no, like they go down to anywhere where it's still safe. You know what I mean? So that they can get back on their feet. Makes sense too. I mean, I probably would do the same thing if it happened to me. So
yeah, there's nothing wrong with pivoting, but it's also kind of the American way where we tend to spend more than we have, live larger than we are. And then, oh crud, we didn't plan. And now look, we're out of money. So looks like we're going to have a lifestyle change. Like that's, yeah, unfortunately, you know, financial literacy is not something that we've been taught.
It's really sad too.
Yeah, man, that's intriguing. That's very, very intriguing. So, I mean, it seems like everybody'd be looking, you know, if there's such a high demand for the product you guys have, it seems like the competition for that would just be astronomical.
Oh, it is. I mean, we're selling pretty much all of our assets in Tampa are now for sale. We're buying another property where it's just January 22. We're buying one in January 22 right now in outside of Atlanta. So, I mean, we've just been selling a lot of stuff. It's just, we've hit our targets already in 3 years, 4 years that we thought was going to take 5 to 7, especially when we were buying during COVID as well. So you're like, you know, you tell your investors, you're like, yeah, we'll be fine in 7 years. I mean, this is the plan, but I mean, I don't know if it's going to be 3 years. And then everything just went nuts.
Right.
Midway through 2020, COVID lasted for like 45 days or 90 days or something. Then people are like, all right, let's buy everything in stock and let's buy more even that. And it just kind of went crazy.
Right, man, that's absolutely fantastic. If somebody wanted to kind of replicate what you guys are doing somewhere else and find similar opportunity, what would you tell them to do?
Number one is like figure out what kind of property in the areas, like, so you have a market that you're looking at and then find the areas within it that you feel that are going to work for your business plan. If you want to be buying properties for a 5 or 7 year business plan, then you can get a touch more aggressive and start pushing that line of gentrification, you know, that push that line a little bit more. If you're looking for shorter holds, you have to buy like when you're inside of it, and you're going to pay a little bit more for that. But it's also, you know, people are like, oh, we're buying gentrification. Well, that's good if it's like 5 or 7 years. It's very difficult to make money there very quickly. I mean, now is very different. I mean, this is not how it's going to be, you know, this is not how it usually is in real estate. So now it's you buy anything and you sell it, and you'll make money. But wherever it is, doesn't matter where it is. But normally you have to be buying it in the area where there's, you know, you want to be driving through a neighborhood and be like, this has been renovated. This looks terrible. And there's dumpsters everywhere. And on this property. So you're like, okay, so there's like, this is like, I'm in the wave now, right. But that's not, it doesn't, you know, that doesn't just go in 1 month or something. It takes years. So if you make sure that these neighborhoods that you're picking up, you know, there's going to be future there. I just think it's very, I think some of the lowest risk is when you're buying somewhere between C plus and B properties. And because number one, it's very difficult for these people to leave and buy a house, especially in these housing markets. If I'm buying a unit, which we used to buy units for $65,000, $70,000 a unit in Tampa, and now the average home is like $250,000, $280,000, $300,000, whatever it is in Tampa. I mean, it's very difficult from going from $70,000 to $280,000, right? If you're renting. But if I have a B plus property, we were talking before, I'm paying $2,500 a month, much easier for me to now to go, oh, 1,100 square foot apartment, 1,100 square foot house, similar payment. Even if I'm overpaying for it, I'm done. You know what I mean? So they have more of an exit strategy. So you're going to have more people that are going to be stickier where you are. I mean, I have one tenant, one of our properties in Connecticut that we're selling now. And I was self-managing from 06 to 2012. And I rented to them in 2011 and they just renewed again. So it's like, and this is with rent increases every year. So the thing is like, you have people that if you can get them right, you know, you find the units in a market that are the ones that are really hot, like Tampa, two bedrooms, super hot, one bedrooms, not as much. So just like find what, where you can have lease turnover. Markets in Connecticut, if I have three bedrooms, they're there for 10 years. You know what I mean? So the thing though is that if you can find what's best in that market where people have, where you have the less turnover, because turnover, as you know, I mean, that's the biggest expense in this whole business. So if you can minimize that, that's where you're going to print money.
Yeah, absolutely. When we were flipping houses, we always said we want to sell on the, where there's the largest pool of buyers, right? So there's a certain band, depending on what your city is, as where what the median home price sale it is, or median home sale price is. And so the same thing for you guys. It's like, okay, what's the median rent? What is it the largest pool of renters can afford? And as long as you're providing that inventory, then you're probably going to have, you know, consistent and very sticky tenants.
Yeah, probably the same thing for you. If I brought you a house, so you're flipping, that's a 2,900 square feet house. You'd probably be like, what am I going to do with this? But if I brought you a 1,500 square foot 3,200, you'd be like, you know,
great.
Let's do this.
On that. Yeah. It's been a long time since I flipped a house, but yes. Yeah. It certainly done my share of it in the back in the day, but yeah, that absolutely right. I'd have no idea what to do with the 2-1. It would be worthless to me. So that's fascinating. Charles, I really enjoyed this conversation. Learned a lot about what you guys are doing and how you're doing it. Thanks for taking the time to break that down. Certainly appreciate it. Questions for you. Final four questions. Yeah. And the first one is this. Final four questions. Here we go. What is one tool or resource, think software, that you can't live without?
Trello.
Can you tell us what that does?
Trello is like a little drum down, I guess you would say Asana. And it's just you can put it, it goes on, it can be on your web browser, on your computer, it can be on your phone, on an app. And I just have different boards and you can move stuff between it. So it's like, keep my to-do lists on that. I can keep goals on. So anywhere, if I have a question or if I have anything I've got to do, I forget something, I can put it right in there for what I got to do. And my wife used to make fun of me for years. And then I peered over her shoulder about a year ago and I saw her using it. And of course, it was her idea for me to start using in the beginning. So it's all set. But.
Right. Oh, that's funny. That's awesome. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I would buy in better areas. Just make sure when you're buying, it's going to be more expensive. It's going to hurt you. It's going to kill you to do it, but buy in better areas. My dad bought in crappy areas. And at the end of his career, he was buying in better areas and he wouldn't let me buy in any terrible areas when I bought. And he was like, nope, won't even look at it. When I was looking to buy property, because you want to buy cheap and you think you're going to get a better return. Don't do that. You can just skip over like 10 years of most real estate investors like hell on earth, and then just go and buy better property.
Right. You said it, man. If you're listening to this show, pay attention. That's golden advice right there. Charles, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So when we're going into an area, I always like to, when we have properties in an area, we're always giving back. We actually monthly to food banks in that area. So that's something big that I've started. And I'm kind of fine tuning how I'm going to do it even better and make it a little bit more streamlined. But that's one thing I like. I mean, I like doing it, and I think it's the easiest because I'm always worried when you're giving money away that it's going to go to the wrong causes, but you can't really do wrong if someone's giving you, you know, you're giving away Campbell's soup or something, you know what I mean? So,
right. Absolutely, man. Love it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Well, Sam, what you can do is if you go to schedulecharles.com, that's schedulecharles.com, it goes right to a booking page on my website at charlescrillo.com, and set up a 30-minute call with me if you're interested in actively or passively investing in real estate. If you've never invested in real estate, if you have a whole portfolio, if you want to go to the next level, and I'll spend 30 minutes with you, obviously free, and see kind of possibly we can work together and possibly, you know, what I can do to kind of point you in the right direction for you to scale your business up.
Sounds great. Charles, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam, for having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.